You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I have a report with Forest and Bird as they have released a report indicating that hundreds of areas of native habitat are being deliberately and unlawfully harmed around the country with near impunity. To find out more, I chatted to the Forest and Bird executive, Kevin Haig, and I began by asking him what sort of areas are being affected.
Well, nearly all of our native habitat types have been in decline in the last 10 years or so. What we've shown with this new report is that over the last 3 years, that people are continuing to do things like burn native bush or cut it down, drain wetlands, fertilise dry land areas, all of which are further damaging habitats that are already in a very precarious state.
The report documented hundreds of these instances. What reasons do people have for destroying the environment, such as burning? Is it for farming or any other particular industry?
It's almost always for commercial reasons. If an area is a wetland, for example, well, it can't be farmed or used for commercial reasons. We have still many of our industries, farming, fishing, forestry, that work on an extractive model. They see nature as just raw materials for their economic activity or the waste disposal for their economic activity. And what the report shows is that if you're, say, a farmer who would rather put some dairy cows in a place that is currently occupied by native bush or a wetland, well, if you get rid of that native bush or the wetland, you almost certainly will not face negative consequences. And if you do, they'll be of such a minor scale that actually the economic benefit still outweighs it.
The report described this as an environmental crime wave. Does this mean that instances of harm to the environment are increasing?
It's hard to know. I mean, it's the first time we've done this report, so we don't know whether there is more now. But I guess what we do know is that all of these habitat types are in decline and are under considerable pressure. So any further pressure, as we're seeing, is going to result in extinctions of species, further erosion of ecosystems. Ultimately, of course, it will be harmful for people because we're part of those ecosystems too.
Much of the damage is being done on private and public land. First off, for the damage that's being done on public land, who is committing this, and are there not rules in place to prevent this?
Well, the report really is more about private land, but even on public land, we have things like, grazing licenses. We have people moving into conservation land and destroying that. On private land, this is the land that is controlled by local and regional councils. And the report's titled See No Evil because the evidence is clearly that in many, perhaps most cases, actually those councils, rather than monitoring the state of private land, are looking the other way. And if they ever take any action, they only take it as a result of complaints rather than on the basis of any proactive work on their own part.
What benefits would there be to councils for looking the other way?
So the benefit to them is just cost minimisation. It costs money to be monitoring the state of the environment on private land. So even though there's a legal responsibility for them to do so, if in fact they don't do it, well, actually they save all of the money that would have been involved in doing that. And, I have some sympathy actually, and obviously it's terrible that councils are so completely failing to do their job in nearly every case. But I live in Greymouth on the west coast of the South Island. We have a huge area and a very small number of ratepayers. So the council is all of the time, really stretched to do all of the things that it's supposed to do under the law. And I guess if we take a step back and say, well, as a country, what system ought we to have to ensure that, that nature is well protected there? We probably, if we were starting from a clean slate, wouldn't choose to use the council system where the resourcing for both the monitoring and the enforcement of our rules and regulations was left up to councils with highly variable rating bases and therefore ability to pay.
One of the things that the report said was that there have been no meaningful consequences for people who commit these environmental crimes. What repercussions would Forest and Bird recommend for those who are responsible for this damage being committed on private land?
Well, so we always talk about industries in terms of a bell curve. You know, at the good end of the curve, you've got people who are extremely responsible. They're doing innovative things to try and perform better and better. And you can, like in the farming world, you could think of the farmers that people see on Country Calendar every week. They're all great farmers doing fantastic things for the environment as well. Most farmers or players in the industry are somewhere in the middle. And then at the worst end, you've got a bunch of ratbags and criminals who will only change their destructive environmental practices if they are absolutely made to. And that means you need both monitoring of performance and you need meaningful penalties. So you need that farmer who's looking at that patch of bush and saying, I think I might burn that down so I can put some more cows on, to also be thinking, but if I did that, you know, I would get caught, or there's a good chance that I'd get caught, and then there'd be a meaningful penalty. Well, look, the report itself documents these hundreds of incidents of criminal action on private land, and yet for the entire country, for the entire three-year period that that this report covers, there were just 7 prosecutions. And at that level, you know, most of the consequences when wrongdoing was actually uncovered were abatement notices or some other version of the slap on the wrist for the wet bus ticket. So that farmer who's thinking about burning down that section of bush or draining that wetland can be pretty sure that there'll be almost no consequence, even if they're found.
The latest Parliament figures were announced after election night, with an overwhelming majority going to Labour. It's interesting that you say this report was conducted over a three-year period, which was Labour's term in the last Parliament. You think during this last term they did enough to protect the environment from situations like this?
Well, I think this was something that was not particularly on their radar. There has been an important process going on, developing a biodiversity strategy, Te Mana or Te Tai Au, which is a strategy that we strongly support. And this next 3 years will be one where we will be watching very closely to see whether they actually properly resource that, or whether it's just intended to be a rhetorical device. And there's a companion piece, which is a national policy statement on Indigenous biodiversity, which will put in place national rules for the protection of nature on private land that all regional and local councils would then need to implement. That has not yet been gazetted, so it's not yet in place. But it's ready to go. So it will be a first test of this new government as to whether it intends to actually take action to protect nature on private land or not.
And the talk now is whether Labour will decide to form a coalition government with the Greens. Do you think for the Green Party it would be most efficient to effect change in a coalition, or do you think there's a potential benefit to them being in opposition to Labour, not having to toe the line and able to call them out when they're not doing enough?
Yeah, so I mean, I approach this issue from both the point of view of having been a member of Parliament and been in opposition and trying to achieve gains there. And I'd have to say, while you sometimes get to say things that are can be popular and might help you build a stronger presence at the next election, those things that you get to say don't have a lot of effect on the government. So it's possible to make some gains from opposition, but they tend to be few and far between. So while I understand the perspective of people saying that the Greens should be in opposition, critique Labor's performance, and try and build a stronger position for subsequent elections, my role as Chief Executive of Forest and Bird makes me acutely aware just how much nature is at breaking point. You know, we've got those more than 4,000 species, you know, at risk of or threatened with extinction, you know, hundreds of which are right on the very brink. We've got two-thirds of our ecosystems in collapse. We've got all of these habitat types that continue to be lost. You know, we need change now. If I were advising the Greens, I would be saying, to the extent that you want to improve things for nature and be a party that stands for positive environmental change, a party that stands for making the climate crisis less bad, we need you to be doing that work right now. And of course, we're saying exactly the same thing for Labor. We need these gains now, in these 3 years, not in some notional future.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.